In the 1950s, there was a very silly song that came out about a man driving a Cadillac down the highway feeling very good about himself, and a tiny Nash Rambler pulls up behind him. Now, this Nash Rambler, if you're aware of it, was a car that was built in the mid-1950s, 1954 to 1956-ish. It was a very small and peculiar little car. Its cousin car, the Nash Metro, was also a very small and peculiar little car, which Nash tended to produce. But it wasn't a powerful car. It was small and a bit of a pipsqueak on the highway. And so throughout the song then, the man in the Cadillac in his pride keeps speeding up because he doesn't want the little Nash Rambler to pass him. And every time he goes into the next gear and speeds up a little bit more and a little bit more, that Nash Rambler keeps right along his tail, beeping the whole way. It's a humorous song. It's a very silly song. And at the end of it, the man is going 120 miles per hour in his Cadillac, completely stressed out, singing faster than at the beginning. And the man in the Nash Rambler pulls up next to him, rolls down his window and says, "Hey, buddy, how do you get a car like this out of second gear?" Now, I know that's a very silly way to start a sermon, but it's actually not that different from some of the situations that we face in our own lives as we drive down the freeway here in Phoenix. There are a lot of rude drivers out there. There are a lot of people who want to cut everybody else off. It's like it's the Indianapolis 500 out there sometimes on the freeways. Everybody wants to get ahead. It's Darwinism really played out in traffic scenarios, isn't it? Survival of the fittest. Get on or get off. And there's a lot of rude people. Now, whether it's freeways or talking to people at a restaurant or at a store or getting bad service over the phone, whatever it is, we feel like it's becoming a very rude culture, from politicians and celebrities to Twitter and Facebook and other social media outlets being forums for just political rants and complaining about everything out there. Does it feel like America is becoming a less civilized civilization? In a recent study that was outlined by Dr. Forney of Johns Hopkins University, he asserts that 80% of Americans believe that incivility or rudeness has become a national problem. And nearly the same percentage think that rudeness has gotten worse in just the last 10 or 15 years alone. So what has become of us? And what can Christians do to help calm down our neighbors, our coworkers, our family members, and even other Christians when it comes to the subject of rudeness? In 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 4, love is described in this way. Love is patient and love is kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It doesn't insist on its own way, and it's not irritable or resentful. What better way can you describe love than how we interact with each other? And perhaps it's the pace of our lives, or the constant exposure to noise all the time, or the expectation for success, or the pressure to get the most out of every single drop out of life, or the weight of self-inflicted financial burdens like major debt problems that we face. But whatever reason, if it's all of these things or one of these things or something different for you, how have we strayed so far from that definition of love? What conditions exist around your life that have pushed you to the point where you've expressed rudeness to other people around you? And we're all guilty of it, even the very best of us. Even people who are very calm have their breaking point at some point. Let's hope that we don't discover it, and let's hope that when we do discover it, we find ways of coping with it in a more productive way than lashing out at the people around us. Most importantly, what can we do as Christians to represent Christ in the best way possible? Because how we represent Christ makes a big difference in how we can change the people around us. If we're going to be a good influence or a bad influence, leave a good impression or a terrible impression, are we any better than the worldly people around us, or are we just like them? When we get onto the freeway and merge into the chaos, are we no better than the people around us? You know, rudeness is really easy sometimes when it's faceless, when it's nameless. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the lesson. But let's make sure that we keep a face and a humanity to the people that we're rude to. When you cut somebody off, you're not cutting off a car. You're cutting off a person, a potential convert to Christ. When you're rude to that waitress or that person who's serving you in some way at a business, you're not just being rude to an employee of a store. You are being rude to a potential convert to Christ. When you're rude to a brother in Christ, that's not just another human being. Though we should be kind to all human beings, but most especially, my friends, to fellow members of the household of God. And it is a countless number of Christians, former Christians, whose faith has been ruined because of Christians that couldn't treat them in a civil way. I have people in my own family, my own extended family at least, who've left the church, who've left Jesus Christ. And you ask them why, and they go through their whole litany of excuses. But really, when it boils down to it, the biggest excuse they throw out there, which shouldn't be an excuse, but let's not give it to them, but the biggest excuse they throw out there more often than not is, church is full of hypocrites. Church is full of people who are just as bad as those in the world. They weren't very nice to me. They were rude to me. Stop giving people excuses. Whether it's an unbeliever or a believer, it doesn't matter. We've got to quell rudeness in our lives if we ever think we're going to fix the problem in the rest of the people around us. Or at least barely make a dent in the problem that exists around us. Like it says in 1 Peter chapter 2, so put away, to Christians, put away malice and deceit and hypocrisy and envy and all slander, which is manifested in rudeness, isn't it? So he doesn't use the word rude there in 1 Peter 2 verse 1, but it's what he's talking about. It's how it's manifested. And like newborn babes, long for the pure milk of Christ, that by it you may grow up into salvation, he says. If indeed you have tasted that the Lord is good, as you come to him, he writes, a living stone rejected by men, but in the sight of God, chosen and precious, you yourselves, like living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood. What is holiness? I mean, at its core definition, what is holiness? But to be pleasing to God, to be like God in all things, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. That is our life, and we put a big speed bump in our way if we facilitate rudeness in that life. So what are some of the excuses that we make when it comes to our level of rudeness? What are the ways that we dismiss rudeness in our life? Because the sad reality is that if somebody wants to be rude, they have plenty of reasons to be. Plenty of fabricated reasons, perceived reasons. Excuses is all they are in the end. But if you want to be a rude person, if it feels good to be rude in some twisted way, or if you feel like venting, there are plenty of excuses that exist around you all the time. The fuel is always there because we live in a fallen world permeated with sin. So like James writes in James chapter 4 and verse 1, what is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is not the source your pleasures, which wage war in your members? You lust and you do not have, so you commit murder. You're envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. And I think what James is saying is, you're always going to have a reason to fight with somebody out there. There's always somebody richer than you, or more successful than you, or who drives a faster, more expensive car than you. There's always somebody out there or some reason out there to be mean, to be in a bad mood, to complain and whine and fuss. Just scroll through Facebook for 5 minutes and you'll find something that makes you mad. That's why Brian's not even on Facebook anymore. He said, if you need me, I'll be over on Instagram where I can just post all my fancy photographs. It's true. But all you have to do is watch the news. I mean, the news is as bad as anything else, isn't it? Some people, their preferred drug is CNN. Other people, their preferred drug is Fox News. So wherever you land on the political spectrum, all you have to do is turn the TV on and something will make you mad, right? Something is out there that will make you mad. The access is there. It's always available to us, 24 hours a day. So here are some excuses that we make to accommodate or excuse the rudeness in our lives. Maybe it's feeling victimized, which gives us a sense of some misplaced righteous indignation, as if two wrongs do in fact make a right. We make excuses like, yeah, well, he did it first. He did it to me first. Didn't he deserve it? He did it to me first is the rallying cry of the perpetual victim in our society. Remember, however, what Paul wrote in Romans chapter 12, beginning in verse 17. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all people. Ooh, that's easy to write, easy to read, hard to live by, isn't it? If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all people. One great lesson I take away from that, I can't control how rude other people are. I can't control the person who cuts me off on the road. And I can't control the person who posts something stupid on Facebook. I cannot control that. But I can control my response. And so far as it depends on me, I can strive to be at peace with all people. Good people, bad people, believers and unbelievers alike. I can control that. Another excuse that people tend to make is stress. Well, I only have a temper when I'm stressed out, or that's just how I get at the end of a long day at work. During a slumping economy, it seems that rudeness comes very naturally to people. And what we need to realize, however, is that a bad economy or a lost job or a difficult medical condition do not excuse sin. It doesn't excuse sin. Many people throughout history have had to endure trials, and they kept their character through thick and thin. I know we go to Job a lot of times for this very point, but that's the reason why God put that in the Bible. Job is smack dab in the middle of the Bible. It is impossible to ignore because it is a story of a man who faced incredible trials, who had every reason to be mean to the people around him and rude because he was surrounded by rude people who accused him of things that weren't true. And yet, at the end of it all, he's a man who kept his character and he kept his cool. Got to remember Job. But he's not alone. David, Paul, Jesus himself, these are all people who kept their cool as well under difficult circumstances. Third, rudeness is often justified because of a belief that it's the only way that you can get your point across. And I think you look at example or exhibit A would be the town hall meetings that happen sometimes during political seasons. Some people feel like the only way they can get their point across is to just yell louder than the person on the other side of the room from them. You ever turn on C-SPAN? It was like C-SPAN 3 or something where you can watch the British Parliament. I mean, if you think our Congress is a mess, watch the British Parliament sometime. Those people are nasty with each other. For being the most polite society in the world, they are nasty in the British Parliament. It's actually really humorous to watch from a distance. But you see the way politicians interact with each other. See the way people talk to each other at town hall meetings. See the way people make comments on the comment section of any politically charged article, of any politically charged news du jour. And people believe that if I just yell louder than everybody else around me, then finally I'll get some respect. Yet Proverbs 15 verse 1 says, "A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word only stirs up anger." Fourth, one of the other excuses we make is that much of our culture's rudeness is veiled in humor, as if a joke gives us permission to say and do anything. And as long as you end your sentence with, "but I was just kidding," then you're allowed to say things that are racist or prejudiced in some way. You're allowed to say things that are insensitive. You're allowed to say things that are just patently untrue, as long as you say, "but I was just joking." And yet, doesn't that remind you of another proverb? Anybody remember Proverbs chapter 26, verses 18 through 19? One of my favorite proverbs, by the way. Proverbs 26, verses 18 and 19 says, "Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death." Let me read that again. "Like a madman who throws arrows, firebrands, and death, So is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, "Was I not joking? Hey, stop taking it so seriously. I'm just kidding. Don't be such a spaz. Chill out. I'm just joking, man." You know, that phrase to me often simply serves as a very thin veil for what is really going on behind your heart. Prejudiced people will say prejudiced things. Rude people will say rude things. Racist people will say racist things. And they'll throw a thin veneer over the top of it and say, "But it's just humor. Come on, we all gotta laugh about it, don't we?" That's easy to say when you're not the victim. And it's easy to say when your family hasn't been hurt by something, the object of the joke. Now, how is rudeness facilitated in our lives? How do we breed rudeness? If there are excuses that we make, then are there conditions that we keep knowingly in our lives that allow rudeness to grow and fester? The first one is this: by exposure to it. Rudeness will grow in an environment where it grows best, just like mold in a petri dish. When you allow yourself to be exposed to rudeness constantly, don't be surprised or shocked when you end up becoming a rude person as well. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 24 and 25 says, "Do not associate with a man given to anger, or go with a hot-tempered man, lest you learn his ways and find a snare for yourself." And the same thing is said of gossip in Proverbs 20 and verse 19. Do not associate with a gossip. The longer you're around that kind of person, the more like them you become. And if you have a bunch of rude friends, or you're always watching rude things, or the kind of TV shows that you watch are constantly exposing you to rude behavior, you just might end up becoming rude yourself. And by its very nature, sin has a desensitizing effect on us, that the more we're exposed to it, the less we are repulsed by it. Let me say that again for emphasis. The more we are exposed to sin, the less we're repulsed by sin. Great verse on this subject, Jeremiah 6 and verse 15. "Were they ashamed because of the abomination they had done? They were not even ashamed at all. They didn't even know how to blush." That by exposure to sin, by constantly seeing it and practicing and participating in it, they had reached a point where they were no longer even embarrassed by it. They'd become desensitized to their sin and its effects. TV shows, for example, are constantly pushing the barrier. And I'm going to date myself a little bit here. But back in the day, there were certain shows that were seen as pretty risque, pretty much on the edge of what was acceptable on network television. I think MASH and Cheers are good examples of that. That in their day, MASH and Cheers were seen as they were pretty edgy shows. And yet now you find things like MASH and Cheers on ABC Family. Because what's on TV now makes something like MASH and Cheers seem so much less edgy than it was at the time. And I know there's plenty of other examples that we could look to that illustrate that very point, but the edgy shows from 20 or 30 years ago are not edgy any longer. The shows that pushed the limits 20 or 30 years ago, they're safely within the limits of society's acceptable range now. And that's the way it is. That's the nature of the beast, that it's constantly pushing and pushing and pushing further and further and further. We need to be very careful about the kind of things that we expose ourselves to. We must be careful about that, or we'll wake up one day and realize that we don't find sin as repulsing as it should be, as it actually is. But sin, rudeness is also bred through anonymity. And what I mean by anonymity is what I referenced a little bit earlier in the lesson, that it's easy to think that you're cutting off a car on the road, or when it's just the voice of somebody at the other end of the line. That Verizon customer service agent, that person from the power company, a debt collector or something. It's easy to think of them as just being some entity at the end of a phone line and not a real human being. And you just ruin that person's day. Honestly, nurses are the same way. And a lot of people in the healthcare profession, by the way, a lot of people in that world are treated in the same way. That's just a nurse. You're just a nurse. And I'm allowed to walk all over you because at the end of your shift, you'll go away and I won't see you ever again. So I can whine and complain and treat you miserably as long as you're stuck here in this hospital serving me. And you know, as long as things are really anonymous, as long as we don't have to actually confront the human behind the position, it is easy to be rude to people. The internet gives us anonymity as well. We're able to get online with some name of whatever we want to call ourselves, and we can say whatever we want when it comes to the internet. And it amazes me. I honestly see people saying things on Facebook, commenting, that I highly doubt they would ever say to somebody's face in person. But there's a third way that rudeness is bred in our lives, by taking the bait that is handed to us. Rude people want to share their misery, so they bait other people around them with edgy or sarcastic or inflammatory actions. Whether it's things that they say online or things they say in person or the way that they dress and the way they act around people. Don't take the bait. It's what they want. Instead of nibbling at the end of the hook, let's respond with rudeness, or let's respond to rudeness with shocking levels of kindness. Like Romans chapter 12 talks about, instead of repaying evil for evil, never treating people the way they treat you, respond by loving them, being kind to them, sharing with them, practicing charity with them. Jesus said the same thing in Matthew chapter 5, verses 10 through 12. That when you are persecuted for my name's sake, you need to show people who you really are. That you're the salt of the earth, you're the light of the world, and you're not at their level. It reminds me of a comic that I actually saw just this week. Everybody remember Jim Snyder? He used to live here in the area. He posted this on his Facebook the other day, and I felt like it summed up just perfectly the way that people tend to act with each other, of this taking the bait. Like I said, if you want to be grumpy, there's always reasons to be grumpy out there. If you feel like being cranky and mean and rude, there will always be excuses. There's always bait dangling out there, waiting to be nibbled on by somebody. You've got to push it all aside. Nobody's holding a gun to your head forcing you to watch the news. Nobody made you click on that article that you saw on Facebook. Nobody forced you to read that infuriating article about this thing or that thing. Nobody forced you. But you nibbled. And once you take that first nibble, you're hooked. And your whole day is ruined. So let's end on a positive note here. How do I combat rudeness in my life? How do I fight this? How do I resist it? And do something more useful, more positive with the time that's given to me. In Ephesians 5 and verse 4, it says, "Nor filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not befitting, but rather giving of thanks." Paul offers an alternative. Instead of living this way, you live that way. Instead of taking door number one, you take door number two. Instead of veering to the left, you veer to the right and live the opposite way. Colossians chapter 3, verses 8 through 10. "But now you also put them all aside." Get rid of them. Cast them out. "Anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive speech from your mouth. Don't lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices and have put on the new self." And in short, we have to start living the golden rule. The golden rule that started in the mind of God from divinity itself and was spoken so eloquently by Jesus in Matthew 7. "However you want people to treat you, so treat them. For this is the law and the prophets." What does this look like then? Give people the benefit of the doubt. Stop assuming the worst about everybody around you. Think before you speak. And if that's too hard, ask somebody to help you think before you speak. Spouses are really good that way. Instead of sending that email, instead of making that phone call, why don't you ask somebody for help? Ask them, "How should I respond to this? Read this email for me. Will you check this email for me before I send it and make sure I'm not going overboard here?" Have a filter of some kind in your life that can weed out the things you shouldn't say. Don't dismiss an anger management method just because it's cliched. There truly is something to be said about counting backwards from 20. And if you need to count backwards from 100, if that's how long it takes, try 100. I know it's cliched. It's silly. Count backwards from this or that. Try it, though. Don't knock it. Try it. And it is amazing how even simple tricks like that will make a difference. If you have a tendency to make hurtful jokes, if it is your natural tendency to be a sarcastic person, just be really careful. Maybe think about toning down the kind of jokes several steps back from what you think is funny. If you think this is funny, this level of sarcasm, tone it down two steps and see how people respond to that. Because you never know how hurtful you're being by something that you think is funny, but might not be funny at all to somebody else who's more negatively affected by it. Be gracious in victory. When your team wins, football, basketball, whatever it is, when your team... Tom's smiling at me. That's only because Ohio State is 8-0 against the University of Oregon in football. See, I said it from the pulpit. I am gracious in absolute and utter historical defeat. But in every area of life, when you're victorious, be gracious to people. Be kind to people. Because I think nothing ruins a friendship quite like being an obnoxious sports fan. For a refreshing change of pace, turn off the media. You know what's interesting is the birds don't usually give you a lot of reasons to be angry. Trees aren't goading you on. Trees aren't out there egging you on with political statements that are opposed to what you believe. A cool breeze on a warm fall day, it's hard to feel cranky when you go out for a little walk. Take your dog out for a walk. And it's amazing when you turn the TV off, get away from the internet, get away from those kinds of things, it does make a palpable difference in your life. Try to reflect on the times that you've been hurt by the other people around you. Try to reflect on times that you have hurt others. And when you put the shoe on, wear somebody's shoe for a few miles, right? You know, live in their shoes. Live like them, think about them, and it amazes you really when you think about all the times that you've hurt somebody and you've been hurt by others. Gives you some perspective. And remember that you have a responsibility to God, that God is listening to everything that you say. Everything that proceeds out of the mouth of man, God hears it. God knows it. Every dirty look that you give, every comment that you make, every moment of anger that passes through your heart, that skips the filter phase of righteousness and holiness, God sees it, and He knows it. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, excuse me, in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10, powerful verse that we need to keep in mind at all times, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. And rudeness is included in that. Now, if you're not a Christian here this morning, you really ought to be. This is your opportunity to make things right with God by obeying the gospel. You don't earn it, by the way. You can't earn it. You can't buy it. You can't trade for it. You have nothing. You have nothing that God wants. Accept your submission to His will. Love God. Devote yourself to Him. Commit yourself to Him. Obey the will and the commandments of God by heeding the words of the gospel. In short, Jesus Himself said in Mark 16, verse 16, he who believes and is baptized will be saved, but he who does not believe will be condemned. So if the invitation applies to you in any way, then please let that need be known by coming forward as we stand and sing.